Welcome to Bucket List with me, Monique Chambers. Every week, I'll be talking to different business people, artists, sports people, and other personalities about things that they've done in their life and things that they want to do. Join me and dig deep. Welcome to this week's edition of The Bucket List with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is comedian James Ryder. Now, James has just returned from Japan, which is an item on my bucket list, I must admit to you. So tell us, how did a comedian from Malta get to Japan?
I've been planning to take a trip to Tokyo since I was around 12. And during a three-month run I had last year in Rock of Ages, I've been thinking I want to have a bit of a change in my life. And then, all of a sudden, out of the blue, I saw this ad for the Tokyo Comedy Store. And they were looking for new people, to which I sent an email. And they instantly invited me to be on their mailing list for a good 6-month period. So instantly, I just snatched that ripe up, booked my tickets. My father called it, you know, the experience of a lifetime. My mother called it, why are you doing this to me? yes, it was, a lot of people ask me that, actually, because, you know, being from Malta and Japan is a long way. But yes, that's the origin of my interest to make the move.
So how did your comedy go down in Japan?
Actually, quite well. From all the audience members, I think only 1% were actually Japanese.
Oh, okay, so lots of expats and...
There are so many expats in Tokyo, and mostly Americans, because around Tokyo there are around 20 military bases.
Oh.
So there would be many people living there and their families living in these bases, or just simply expats. So the majority of my audience were Americans, British, Europeans, and the like. Not many Japanese people, but there were Japanese people who had a clear understanding of stand-up comedy.
Excellent. And so did you have a set that was specifically written for that event, or was it something that you've been working on?
Oh yes,
on?
I mean, originally I wanted to play it safe and make a set about Malta, about, you know, where I'm from. But the thing is, there was just so much material there. First of all, the fact that the buses and the trains arrived exactly on time to the second. I mean, for me, that was my biggest culture shock. You know, I called my father, it was 3 a.m. back here. I'm like, Dad, you won't believe this! You won't believe this! They come here on time! And also, in the morning, there's a huge rush hour, because I was living right next to Shinjuku Station, which is the busiest train station in the world.
Okay.
4 million people pass through there every single day. And they have people specially employed to cram people inside the cabins during the morning rush hour. And sometimes, and since I didn't have morning employment, I would just sit on the bench, like with a snack or something, and just see it happen.
Wow.
Just see them have their faces just crammed, just take out a book and just slide it on between their face and the glass to try and get something out of it.
Aww.
But there was just so much material, especially for me being Maltese. It was such a huge contrast in terms of quality of life.
Are you thinking of doing a set here about the sort of flip side of what we could be like if we were slightly more organized or slightly more crowded?
In fact, I have my next set. I will be headlining the Beer Fest this year.
Ooh, fantastic.
Chris Dingley actually put me up to it. And
thank you, Chris.
And it's mostly going to be about, you know, a Maltese person living in Japan, and basically the contrast, which is so huge, it's just downright comical.
I can imagine the just the over politeness it almost feels.
Oh yes, I mean, there was a point I was in a, I went to a grocery store. It was around 3 a.m. and I ordered some fast food, and she had this packet of ketchup which she dropped. By accident, it's fine, it was just a packet. And she kept apologizing and apologizing. And in my mind, I was like, do you know where I'm from? Do you have any idea where I'm from?
I wonder what they think when they travel, actually, when they come, because obviously you take lots of photographs to go back home and say, look what happens here. But I wonder if they're absolutely horrified when they go to certain places and the same care and attention isn't.
Actually, in Japan, in Tokyo specifically, I have a friend, Kayoko, and she has a group, an association for Japanese people who love Malta.
Oh, wow!
Yes, and I actually ended up meeting them. It was in this Japanese bar. There were Maltese flags everywhere. And in this group, I have a friend, Masa Taniguchi, and he speaks fluent Maltese.
No.
He speaks fluent Maltese. He actually comes here quite a bit because he studies, I'm not sure what got him into it, but it was Kabuki theater in correlation to Maltese Anna. So he's here a lot studying to try and find the connection, and he speaks Maltese. He speaks better than I do, honestly. He puts me, he corrects me. We were actually, we were lecturing a school in Nakano about Malta for the 2020 Olympics, and there was a point he was correcting me.
Even and he's still your friend.
Sorry, I mean, he bought me some drinks afterwards. He bought me some pity drinks, so it's fine. But Malta is quite well known. Actually, there was a documentary about Malta just a few weeks ago on national television in Japan.
We need to sort of repay the favor, I think.
So I think we do. But
you said there's two Maltese in Tokyo.
There's around three Maltese people living in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And another, you know, handful living in, throughout the rest of Japan.
Wow.
So there are Maltese people. They have, you know, Japanese families and all that. Mm. And there are many Japanese people who just love Malta.
And you're going back soon?
Oh, yes, definitely. Hopefully next year for a couple of weeks.
Okay.
I'm doing a collaborative project on a park.
Okay.
And I need to be back there to kind of supervise the whole thing. But to be honest, that's just an excuse for me to go back up to Tokyo.
Excellent. And this time you're going to take some chisk and twisties and things with you?
They sell them there. There's a Maltese restaurant.
What?
In Tokyo, they sell chisk, they sell baicha, they do a really good rabbit.
Mm.
And there's a Maltese food store. So yeah, you can find everything there.
That's incredible. We don't seem to leverage the...
Yeah, you can buy twisties, you can buy kinny, there's a Maltese food store.
Huh.
So yeah, I mean, I went there for me. That was my Disneyland. I was just there going, this is amazing.
So how long were you there for this time?
I was there for half a year.
Okay.
I was there for a good 6 months.
Mm.
Because also I had a production of Diary of Anne Frank.
Mm-hmm.
In fact...
It doesn't sound very comedic.
No, it doesn't. But to be honest, first of all, I wanted a bit of change of pace in my... you know, theatric direction. And also, no Maltese person had ever appeared on Japanese stage. The Japanese stage. So I wanted to take that for myself.
Absolutely.
So it was fun to be in such an environment, you know, acting in Tokyo, multiple rehearsal spaces, getting to feel out the Japanese theater audience. And, I had planned to be for 6 months. I'm planning some annual trips, but yes, I mean, the hardest part, it's always deciding you're going.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the language.
No, I mean, the language, you can do just fine without it.
Okay.
You can do just fine without it, because even if you're like in a place like a restaurant, everything has pictures on it, it's really easy to point out. And in a grocery store, everything has a number to it, so you just say the number. They have a very good system for... you know, the language barrier.
Uh-huh.
But no, I mean, the hardest part about moving to Tokyo, moving anywhere really, especially for Maltese people, is the decision to actually go to book your flight.
So once you've done that, you think, then it's countdown.
Exactly, because then it's countdown, because I know so many people who fall into two categories. There's the one person who says, I'm going to do it soon, next year maybe,
when
next year
50,
maybe.
It still hasn't happened.
Exactly, and then there are the people who just say, you know, why leave? I have Malta.
Mm.
You know, like, I don't need to travel. It's a form of island fever, really.
Yeah, Malta's fantastic, but there are...
There are other places. Malta, it's 0.1% of the earth, you know?
Uh-huh. But so, when you decided on this date, that was kind of... You just decided on a date randomly, or this was to coincide with this comedy festival, the comedy store?
That was an open deal. I could just go whenever I wanted to. But I had been pushing it for so long... that once I got the email, I said, I just need to do it. Like I said, the hardest part is booking the flight. For me, it was telling my mother. Because I had been telling her for years. She's like, you're never going, you know. Because, you know, mind her, she wants, as a Maltese mother, she wants to keep everyone close to the nest.
Would she ever come and visit you if you go again? Or would you take her over one time?
Oh,
she,
no. I remember we all went to Los Angeles about 10 years ago. And she gets very antsy on flights, let alone long-haul flights. And my father, he has the gift of sleeping through takeoff and landing.
How annoying.
So but he's been flying for around for work for around 3 decades. So it's kind of something you get from it. But no, I don't think so. I have to keep coming here, you know, okay. Just.
But I suppose now with technology, anyway, she's never too far away from you. She can see you.
No, no.
And see all the wild stuff.
And she reminded me of that every single day
sorry.
On Messenger. And then she taught my grandmother how to do it.
Uh-huh.
So, you
big
know.
Big guilt card.
Yes. Yeah. 12 missed calls a day and all that.
Uh-huh.
And it took me at least 2 months to explain to my grandmother the concept of time zone.
Okay, of course. Because your middle of the night would be our middle of the day, pretty much.
It's 7 hours ahead.
Ah.
So right now it's around it's the afternoon over there.
So every morning is the afternoon, every afternoon is the evening. Da, da, da.
Exactly.
Ah, so yeah, time zones.
And oh yes.
And exchange rates is another good one that I have, but that's just my own theory. It comes under Moneyconomics.
Okay, Moneyconomics.
Yes, but let's not go there with that. And so you're going to be going back. Mm-hmm. What about any other items on your bucket list, because you're quite young, so.
Yes, I mean, the next place I'd love to go is New Orleans.
Okay.
I was raised on jazz, so I just have to go, I just want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, I like using concerts as an excuse to go to new places. So last year, and usually with my father, last year we went to see AC/DC.
Okay.
And this year, I went to see Guns N' Roses in Tokyo. He saw them just 2 days ago in Prague.
Uh-huh.
So he doesn't need an excuse to travel because he's done his. It's my turn now.
Mm.
But now we like to find some concerts. For me, it's an excuse to travel. For him, is to listen to the music. So we both kind of
and
benefit
just to hang
from
out
it.
Together. It's a kind
and
of
just hang out. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
quite a cool thing to do with your dad, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah. Not sure about the music taste, but the, you know.
Oh, well, it's fine. For us, it's like jazz and classic rock, so.
So you do the both? You both like jazz as well?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So
and when you go to New Orleans, you're just going to soak it up, or you have plans to do a bit of comedy there as well?
No, I mean, wherever I go, I mean, I was even in Vietnam for a couple of weeks. I tried to get myself a slot. I mean, when you're out in the bigger countries, there's always something going on every night.
Yeah.
So in Tokyo itself, there are over 100 comedy clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So even in wherever you go, there's always somewhere that has an open mic night, just somewhere to go, you know, dish some material.
And Malta does this randomly, you know, sporadically, should I say. Do you think we could actually have a full-time comedy store and it's something that tourists could come to and, you know, visiting comics could come to?
Actually, that is something that, I mean, I remember when I co-founded the first comedy club
mm-hmm.
locally. And nowadays, the torch was kind of handed off to Chris Dingley.
Right.
But right now, thanks to Chris Dingley, shows are getting more, there's comedy getting more in demand.
Uh-huh.
The only thing is, not enough comedians.
Locally, but can we attract people from overseas? So, you know, a Japanese comedian, perhaps?
Oh, we can.
You know.
But first, we need a home for comedy.
To go, so literally a physical space.
Exactly, we need a literal physical space.
Mm.
But the thing is, it is a bit tricky because with the entertainment frame of mind in Malta, everyone says, you know, money. And the thing is, right now, I mean, comedy for current comedians, there are paying gigs. They're always paying gigs.
Mm-hmm.
But if people want to work for a house of comedy, a house of laughs, where there's something going on every night, there has to be an open mic format, there has to be...
Different.
There has to be an entire infrastructure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done, but I believe eventually it's something that can be attained.
Yeah, just because, you know, we're always trying to attract more and more and more and more tourists, and we have more and more and more people coming.
I mean, that would be easy. I mean, once it's done, once it happens, it'll stay on a roll, because even we can apply for it to be an official comedy store.
Mm-hmm.
Then advertise it through the
their channel,
through
uh-huh.
the roster of uh-huh. every other comedy store and tell them, listen, Malta's open for business. If you want to come do some comedy here, go for it.
Because when we travel, actually, we always go to a comedy night.
Exactly.
So you wonder if we had to come to Malta as tourists.
Yeah.
You know, there needs to be more to actually do. You
yes.
can eat and there's theatre, but there's not enough theatre in the summer months to...
No, because it's not the season.
It's a shame, yeah. But it's a shame because then you come and all you do is eat.
Well, yeah,
you know,
and I remember when I was doing Rock of Ages last summer.
That was fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Plenty of tourists were there. They absolutely loved it.
Yeah,
so
we need to get more of that sort.
We desperately need a house of laughs and a summer theatre season.
Mm.
Because
we've got the space, we've got the outdoors. You
exactly,
know, they can do
we have all
why
of that.
Can't we do? I know we have the MADC in the Saint Antoine Garden,
yeah,
which is lovely.
And now we have the quite regular Steve Healy's.
Oh, yes.
That panto.
I don't think we can talk about that.
No, not on this.
But, yeah, no, I just think we've got the outdoor spaces. We really should be
We have the resources. Mm. It's just that no one's putting the, you know, time and effort into it for a proper summer theatre season.
Right, let's start nagging people. We'll start a lobbying campaign.
Yes.
Let's do that. So apart from some travel to... I think I love that idea of AC/DC with your dad. I think that's just so cool.
Oh, yes.
What other things on your bucket list? Are there certain particular jobs, particular, you know, gigs that you yourself want to be at?
I mean, me and my best friend, he will be moving back from London at the end of this month.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of best friends from when they are young, they always contemplate, you know, let's open a bar.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do the whole bar thing. And now we're actually going to, we want to work on doing the bar thing.
Okay.
A house of blues.
Oh, okay.
Which can actually turn into, which can have its own comedy nights as well, really. But, yeah, there's that. And to be honest, for me, my heart's still in Tokyo.
Mm. So what more do you want to do, though? Is it just sort of being around the craziness, for want of a better word? Or is it just being away from home? What's the real draw for you of Tokyo now that you've been there and done it?
To be honest, if you spend enough time in Tokyo, it's enough for it to feel like a home.
Okay.
Because first of all, the people are very respectful, very helpful, mm-hmm. very quiet. It's not St. Julian's from 8 a.m. on, from 8 p.m. onwards, you know.
Isn't it sort of St. Julian's 24 hours a day though?
No, actually, because it is crazy. It is a crazy place. The lights, the ads, which I'm sure you can have an idea of, the stores. But then when it comes down to it, people keep to themselves. They're helpful,
mm-hmm.
and it's just so quiet. I mean, I lived in the main center of Shinjuku,
mm-hmm.
and I lived in this quiet suburban area, and you can hear a pin drop.
So you just don't imagine. You imagine it to be that 24/7.
No, I mean, many people think of it to be like New York on steroids, but visually it is, and commercially it is, but it's actually a quiet place.
You don't feel like you're going to be trampled and pushed and shoved?
Oh, no, that's a different thing.
Ah, okay.
That's a different thing. In fact, at you know, from 7 to between 7 and 8 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
you see the subway just flooded with people.
Okay.
And just all heading into the same office. It reminded me a lot of, you ever seen the Disney movie Zootopia? Or Zootropolis? There was this part where a bus stopped and all these hamsters just came out in their suits and their little bags. And it was just like that, just all these people just rushing to work. And to be honest, I think I enjoyed it most because I wasn't working there.
I was going to say, to watch it instead of being crammed into...
Because across my apartment, I had this view of an office building, and people are there from 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
to around 10 p.m.
Mm. Yeah, they do take stuff seriously, don't
they? They take stuff very, very seriously. Oh. So, in fact, I mean, most expats, 99% of expats there, they're English teachers.
Okay.
They're not actual office workers. Because office work, to be a salary man there, it's
really hard.
It's a tough job.
Even culturally, I think they really do take it seriously. You know, the company
they have
fails,
to. In fact, the culture is to take as little amount of vacation days as possible. If you do get sick, you need to use your vacation days. And then, if you decide to quit and get another job, the person with the least amount of vacation days taken is placed into larger consideration.
Wow.
So because of this, you know...
So that's probably why there's only 3 Maltese living there, to be
fair. Most likely, yes.
So, what are they doing over there anyway? Are they...
I have a friend, Damien, who lives in Hokkaido, and it's in the very north. He works in a bar. I'm not sure if he's a bartender or works the kitchen. Another friend, Davinia. She has this blog, Malteser in Japan.
Okay.
There's John Camilleri, a good friend of mine. He works as this, I believe, this corporate headhunter in Tokyo. And Yeah, that's about that, the Maltese people I know.
Okay. But at least you don't get homesick because you've got your twisties and chips.
Yes, yes, yes. Plus, again, I mean, thanks to, you know, Skype and Facebook, I mean, it's very easy to...
Stay in touch.
To stay in touch.
Okay, we should have smelly vision. I think that's the thing I'm still waiting for, so you can smell your mum's home cooking.
Ah, yes, yes.
But what about anything else when you were young that you thought, I want to try that, and you just haven't got round to doing, even if it was skydiving or...
It was actually the one thing I was closest to, which was fight a sumo wrestler.
Okay.
I was actually planning on taking my powder blue leotard, which you're
yes, I recall,
you're
from
all
last
too
summer.
Familiar with.
Yes.
And actually place a donation to a sumo stable, because they're called stables
okay.
there. The temple is where they live and practice. And just challenge one,
mm-hmm.
fully knowing that...
You're going to get squished.
That I'm going to lose horribly.
You would have to do this, I think, actually, if you did it as a comedy thing, you know, where you could video it and...
Oh, yes,
you
obviously,
know,
I'm planning
around
that. Because I do have... I do comedy videos.
Okay.
I do film comedy videos. And which I either post on my profile or on my page. I don't know
this
how.
This is your Facebook page. Your
yes. I don't know. I don't know how to market myself in this kind of thing. So some of them are on my like official page. Some of them are on my actual profile.
Do everything twice.
Sorry. Yeah. I mean, just whatever it is. Sometimes I think, oh, it's funny. Just go with it.
Mm.
And just basically. Basically, that's why the sumo wrestler...
You could go actually in one of those... Have you seen those inflatable sumo suits?
Yes, yes.
Maybe you could, you know...
No, that's too much of an easy way out. I want to try it. And learn the saxophone. And I bought a saxophone in Japan. I was drinking a bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up ordering one off Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And they arrive in about... If you pay an extra €2, they can arrive within 10 to 20 minutes.
Oh,
yes, yes, it's fantastic.
Gosh.
You subscribe to what's called this Prime thing, and they can arrive within 10 to 20 minutes. So basically, I had this, I just woke up, just hungover, and in my bed is a saxophone.
It could have been worse, Ma.
It could have. It could have. I woke up with a saxophone, and to my girlfriend listening, only a saxophone. And then I just saw my laptop opened with "Thank you for your purchase," and thinking, I bought a saxophone. So now I just have to, you know, pick up a couple of chords.
You have to.
Well, yes, I have to.
So, did you learn some Japanese before you went to Japan?
Yes, yes. I mean, actually, my Japanese teacher was Maltese.
This is just freaking me out.
Yes, yes. Okay. Ayrton Brinkat, mm-hmm. Also a friend of mine. He's a linguist, actually, of all Asian languages, mm. all languages generally.
Mm.
And he taught me Japanese for a good couple of years. So I had enough to get me by in Japan, and to even hold a bit of a conversation with my new Japanese friends.
Uh-huh. And so now the next challenge is to be good enough on the saxophone to whip it out when you're in New Orleans. Is that the next thing?
Yes. Yes, just, you know, that when they do that obnoxious thing, when they block the street from a marching band or something.
You want to be the front of that.
I just join them, really. Or just... yes, I mean, next place is probably Tokyo again because mm-hmm. of this collaborative project. But then, New Orleans.
New Orleans is then. Okay. And then what about when you're after... You know, 30.
Then, most likely, something I always wanted to do was go to the States,
mm-hmm.
start from Texas, going back to New Orleans by car,
mm-hmm.
and do a food trail.
Okay.
So stop off at every barbecue joint,
uh-huh.
and just taste the barbecue.
Huh.
And me and my father, we love watching Food Network.
You should probably do that before you do the sumo wrestling gig.
Actually, that's
because,
true.
You know,
that's true.
One lead to the other.
Because you know, because that can also guarantees that I have teeth to eat with. But yes, and we see these people, whether it's a huge restaurant or just a crazy person who turned his shed into a big smoker. You know, his wife all angry and grumbly on the back, and all of them just making like really good food. And to be honest, that's I'm quite a foodie, mm. so.
So your bar, are you going to sell food as well? Is you're going to try and do some?
Actually, not too sure. We don't even have the name yet.
Huh?
You'd think we'd have the name already, but we really don't. But yes, I mean, I love the food. Like in Vietnam, the weirdest thing I had was egg coffee.
Okay.
But it's amazing because it's like coffee custard.
But so will they put an egg in the coffee.
Yeah, and they whip it.
Okay. Protein, caffeine.
Yeah, yeah, I mean,
I'm actually want to go and make one.
And
now.
And then there's egg beer, which is as vile as it sounds.
Yeah, that wouldn't sound so good, because I know there was a craze recently for butter in your coffee.
Yes.
Which seemed to go down well, but I'm going to try the egg coffee.
Yeah. Oh. And, I mean, Japan, again, it has, Tokyo in itself has the most Michelin stars in all the world.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some things that I personally can't stomach. I mean, recently I was eating with this friend of mine, and you know, there, whatever, you have to try things.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this huge snail on the sashimi platter.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I'm going to omit the word snail, mollusk.
Ah.
It was a mollusk. It was about, you know, 5-6 inches. And you know, I'm pulling it out, and it was just all full.
No.
You know, and when I bit into it, it was like that show Bear Grylls of Survivor, because its insides just exploded into my cheek. So, yes, you can't stomach the story, so you can imagine.
Yes, yes, actually doing.
And it wasn't like, you know, Maltese cuisine, babushu, you know, like seasoned salsa, really tiny. I had this big one, raw, no seasoning.
And you have to eat it because it's the polite thing to do. I guess.
Well, I mean, yes, it is custom. But I mean, from the rest, apart from that, the rest was great.
You don't think they do these things just to test us as human beings, and they wouldn't do it themselves? They just do it to wind up tourists?
Oh, yes, sometimes they do.
Oh, how wonderful.
Because a friend of mine, Yasuhiko, first time I met him, there's this thing called natto, which is fermented soybeans.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me some without telling me that it's natto. So when I ate it, he's just there laughing. And he's telling me, like, with a smirk, like, what do you think? And I'm like, it's interesting.
Yeah, molto particolare.
And he just burst out laughing. So, yes, sometimes they do that to, you know, to mess with you.
Yeah, well, we need to get our own back. All the Japanese, we're hoping that you're going to attract to Malta.
Oh, yes, I am counting on that.
And I'm looking forward to your bar opening and coming in, hearing your comedy.
Yes, thank you.
Hearing you play your saxophone.
And actually, there's a person here who's also opening a Japanese cat cafe.
Okay, tell me more.
So, cat cafes.
You take your cats, or it
no,
has
no, no.
Cats?
It's all they're all the rage in Japan. Like when I was there, I went to a cat cafe, an owl cafe, a hedgehog cafe. There's a snake cafe.
Okay.
There's a pug cafe in Kyoto.
So you take your animal, or
no,
it's just full of?
It's a cafe, just full of them.
Okay.
Where you can just go and interact with them.
So we are getting a little bit of their crazy.
Yes,
that's
we are.
Wonderful. Well, you've been listening to me, Monique Chambers, and the mildly eccentric James Ryder on this week's Bucket List. Thank you for joining me and my guest on this week's Bucket List. I'd also like to thank Samuel Attard and Carmelo Grec, the engineers of this programme.